button. We are now recording for all posterity.
Yeah. Dun, dun, dun.
All right. Oh, and then there's... Oh, I took that out. Crud. Okay. Away we go. Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Screen Geeks Radio. We're frantically trying to figure out if we're on episode 102, and I think we are.
Is it 102? I think so.
Yes, because we did 100, and then we did... Yeah, it's 102. All right, sweet. Yeah. Anyhow, this is Dave.
This is Barry.
Ethan could not make it. Last time I talked to him this past week, he was saying something about holding his breath until Conan O'Brien got the Tonight Show back. And then I think no one heard from him again and after the TMZ report about Leno signing the contract to take it over. And Melissa, unfortunately, had to work, so...
But we have a very special guest with us today. Cody Green! Hey!
How you doing, sir?
I'm doing good.
Good.
Glad to have you with us.
This is part of...
Mrs. Brian, I hope you're listening.
Yes, yes. So we have to, like, watch what we say now, huh?
No.
Just give me extra credit.
She's a teacher. She's heard it all.
Fair enough. All right, then. Sweet.
We should explain. Cody is here for a number of reasons. Cody's a friend of ours, but he is here specifically to talk about the film Birth of a Nation, which we'll get to very soon. This is one of the most notorious and certainly one of the most legendary films ever made. And we're going to have a special segment where we're going to talk strictly about this. And yes, Cody is receiving credit in his history class from Mrs. Bryant for his appearance on this show. So
that's pretty cool.
Yeah. I got to say, it's pretty sweet. We're happy to be a part of your extra credit, as it were. So.
Gross.
Absolutely sweet. All right, yes. Let's talk about what we watched this week. I can't say anything. Oh, no, I finished Chuck season 2. Holy crap, that show amps it up so much the last 4 episodes. I'm just hooked forever. And then we watched the season premiere, at least part 1 of it, and it's such a fun show.
Nice.
And everything else is in this week's releases, so I'll just stop there.
Okay.
This might be a short episode. I'm just saying. Yeah, let's let our guest go ahead and go next.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you watched much this week that you really want
to? I watched District 9.
What did you think of District 9?
I thought it was entertaining. It had a weird backdrop, how that stuff just made him like transform into one of the prones.
Yes.
Which I thought was cool.
Mm-hmm.
That whole entire sequence where he tries to cut off his arm.
It's pretty nasty.
And then he actually does, but it's only one tentacle out of like 5.
It's like, oh, crud, I got too much to go still.
It's pretty sweet, wasn't it, at the end when he gets in the walker and he's like,
that was
isn't
cool.
That awesome?
And especially how it drilled in the back of his head and like there's blood everywhere. I like that movie.
Yeah. So, yes, this is Josh's brother. I'm just saying. The blood, it was awesome.
Yes. What else did you see?
I saw Sherlock Holmes.
Did you like it?
Yeah.
That was me making that weird noise, sir.
It was kind of dark.
Yeah.
Actually. Mm-hmm. I just liked all the scenes where they put, like, stuff into more complicated terms, like a silencer.
Yeah.
He was trying to make a silencer. He called some weird... I don't know how to pronounce what he said.
Yeah.
And then, like, the nuclear bomb at the end.
Mm-hmm.
That was cool.
Yeah.
And the whole entire sequence, it showed how it would
do its thing.
How he thought out what he was going to do before he did it.
Oh, you like with the fights?
Yes.
Yeah.
That was cool.
I kept waiting for that to backfire on him, but it never did because he's Sherlock Holmes. He's brilliant.
Exactly.
So. Yeah.
He's just showing how smart he is.
Yes.
But he was weird.
Yeah, Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, kind of a strange guy. Anything else, sir?
Did you want to talk about Avatar? Or?
Oh, yeah, Avatar.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You saw Avatar. Yeah, yeah. What's
yes,
the Avatar?
I like the visual effects.
Mm-hmm.
The plot was ridiculous, but it was cool.
Sweet. That's kind of how we feel too, so. Nice.
Oh, it was good with the whole entire where you had to attach your hair to the beast to make it like, and then you just think and then it does it. And then, but oh, so I hate to say it, but it was lame. The whole entire plot of the movie, it was...
Did you think it was too long, or did you mind that at all, or no?
I was too into it. I was like, oh god, is he gonna get the big one? And then he did, and then I was like, whoa. And then the whole entire fight scene at the end, and I thought it was awesome.
Cool.
Except for... plot.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's how kind of how we felt too.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Cool movie
I'd like to make
watch.
It clear we did not discuss this movie at all before hitting the record button.
That's true. Yep.
Cool. All right, Barry.
Let's see. Well, I watched Dinosaur, which was a huge summer attraction 10 years ago. Dinosaur, Disney's Dinosaur, with revolutionary CGI effects at the time. They filmed these real locations, some of which were in Hawaii, and they just digitally put the dinosaurs on these actual locations. And I got to say, the integration of live action and the CGI, very well done. The first 7 minutes of the movie are so awesome. They're clearly trying to make like the Lion King with dinosaurs, and like for 7 minutes the movie's fantastic, and then the dinosaurs start talking and it's really bad. Like, it's just a totally forgettable movie and just really, really cheesy and really not that exciting,
because there wasn't Phil Collins music, was there?
There's no Phil Collins music. Well, they kind of do like a Lion King kind of score to it. Really? Yeah, by James Newton Howard. And it really wasn't very good. And you've got like Ossie Davis is one of the voices. Della Reese is one of the voices. This is clearly a movie made 10 years ago, back when like Touched by an Angel was still on the air. But yeah, it was just really, really weak. D.B. Sweeney was the main dinosaur. But it's like, you know, I know Disney's trying to make like all the dinosaurs cute and cuddly, like very Land Before Time. But because they're so photorealistic, they look so scaly and nasty and weird looking. They're like, they're not like cute and cuddly at all. You know, it's a Tyrannosaurus Rex. Anyway, saw Reversal of Fortune. This with Jeremy Irons and Glenn Close. It's a true story of Klaus von Bülow. He, this rich guy who essentially poisoned his wife, put her in a coma, and tried to get all her money away from her. And it's just this really, really cold, really dark, really sad story about how people of privilege kind of use their power and their money as kind of a blanket around them. Really, yeah, not a fun movie, but really fascinating performances. Jeremy Irons and Ron Silver are terrific, but yeah, not a lot of fun. I don't think I'd see that again. Speaking of unpleasant, I saw Quills about the Marquis de Sade.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, Marquis de Sade. You know, good performances, particularly by Joaquin Phoenix, and you know, and certainly Jeffrey Rush. He clearly had a lot of fun overplaying the Marquis de Sade, but not a great performance. I really didn't like it. It's just the material is so relentlessly unpleasant and ugly. Even the moments of humor in it didn't quite make me like the film. I saw Jetsons, the movie, which I've always been curious about. I never saw
it. Oh, you never saw it?
Never saw it.
I went to the theater and saw it opening weekend. That. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Wow. So how did you didn't like it then?
It was okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because like there's a lot of CGI shots and a lot of you know early computer graphics.
And Tiffany,
and that's a problem too because like I don't want to like I mean Tiffany's so easy to pick on anyway, but she's so out of place with the rest of the voice cast.
And that's the problem. I don't have a problem that Tiffany wasn't it. It's just it took you away from the cartoon because they got everyone else. Why not?
Exactly, got everybody else. And you know what's weird? I don't know if you remember this, but there's a musical number in the movie where she's with her boyfriend and the animation gets really psychedelic and surreal and crazy. I think it's the best scene in the movie because the animation is so stunning. The rest of the time, it's really not that good. But then you've got that one scene that's really, really cool. Anyway, I thought that was kind of strange. And then I'll just end it with this. I saw Battlefield Earth. I was just curious. You know, it's been 10 years now since Battlefield Earth came out.
Had you ever seen it?
I saw it in the theater.
Okay.
I saw it in the theater, then I was at a college party, and as a dare, we watched Battlefield Earth, and that was a dare. Everybody was sad they took. But, yeah, that movie, it's much worse than I remember. It's pretty hilarious.
Really?
Yeah, like, I remember being unintentionally funny, but it's just the length, the extent of how unintentionally funny is. There's a scene I love where the good guys are looking out, and they see like a horde of the cyclos coming, and they're like, they're coming quickly, run! And like you see, then they cut to the cyclos, and they're just like slowly lurching like zombies. It's like, what are you so afraid of? It's just one of the many countless moments in the movie that is just so unintentionally funny, and like John Travolta's performance, everybody's so weird, and yeah, it really. I don't know if it's the worst. I don't think it was the worst movie of that year, but it's dreadful.
I didn't think it was physically possible, but this both sucks and blows.
Yeah, there you go.
That's it for me.
All right. Well, then let's go ahead and talk about what hit theaters this past weekend, so we can actually get into what I watched this week.
Absolutely. Likewise. The Hughes brothers have returned after their hiatus from hell. Their new movie is called The Book of Eli. It stars Denzel Washington, Mila Kunis, and Gary Oldman. Currently the number two movie of the week. Got a really good opening of $30 million. Good for them. Mm-hmm. Movie that didn't quite open quite as well, Jackie Chan in The Spy Next Door. Jackie Chan's one of two assaults on cinema. Coming soon, The Karate Kid.
I saw that poster at the theater. I'm like, really?
Yeah. I mean, you've seen the trailer, though, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Unfortunately.
It's literally kids, like literal karate kids beating each other up. I freaking hate that movie. I haven't even seen it yet. The Lovely Bones has expanded. This is Peter Jackson's movie. I feel like I've been watching the trailer for this thing forever. Now it finally opened wide. But yeah, it finally expanded. Did really well. $17 million opening. Very good for that film, considering their views have been so bad. In limited release, you've got Christopher Plummer as Tolstoy, acting alongside Helen Mirren in The Last Station. And another film that also showed at this year's Denver Film Fest, Fish Tank, which is supposed to be really good.
Yeah, I can't wait to see that. I have to see that. So, yeah, let's talk about the trailers before the movies a little bit. From Paris with Love. It looks so idiotic fun. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I think it looks like a good time.
It's like bald Trump John Travolta just having the most fun in the world. Just, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I can't say I'd ever flock to most movies that Jonathan Rhys-Meyers is in, with the exception of Match Point, but he looks like he's in good form, and it looks like fun. I mean,
If you're expecting about the level of intelligence that Taken has, you're kind of...
Well, you know, it's Luc Besson, so it's like the Transporter movies, you know, It's that kind of dumb fun, but yeah, it does.
Well, it's
like
the director
fun.
From Taken.
It is, yep.
So yeah, I'm looking forward to that, and I think that was the only trailer that I didn't laugh at out loud.
Let's see, we had Warner Brothers, so we got the Inception trailer, which is so cool, Inception trailer, which is so amazing. Have you seen the Inception trailer yet?
No.
It was before Sherlock Holmes. That's the one with Leonardo DiCaprio.
With like the entire city folds in on itself.
Yeah. You seen that one yet?
No.
Did you guys get to the theater late?
Yeah, actually.
Well, that's why. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Anyway.
It's such a good trailer.
Yeah, it looks pretty cool. Any other trailers you saw that was good? Or
No. The rest of them I was laughing at pretty hard. and I went to see Book of Eli by myself. So people were kind of... What's he laughing at? I'm like, the movie looks awful. What are you talking about? What am I laughing at?
I'll say this really quick. I saw it Friday morning at 10:45. It was packed. At 10:45, Friday morning. I mean, it was like going to a movie Christmas Day. I couldn't believe how many people were there.
Yeah, I went to the 6:20 last night, and it was packed out, too. I was a little bit surprised.
Did you see my parents?
No. Well, no. Did they go to Hollywood or Cinemark?
Hollywood.
Okay, I went to Cinemark.
Oh.
So, yeah. Just because it's like a mile away from here, so... It's a shorter drive, but yeah. Okay, so should we talk about that, or you want to do the Lovely Bones first?
Talk about Lovely Bones, because you're on your own. I haven't seen Lovely Bones yet.
Okay, so, wow, I don't know what to think about this movie. It's a good movie, I think. I don't know if it's quite deserving of all the hate it's gotten. I don't quite understand that at all. That said, it's not Peter Jackson's best movie by a long shot either. The performances were good in it. Marky Mark's good. Susan Sarandon is kind of annoying. She's supposed to be, but she...
Okay.
Excels in this movie, I'll just say. And the young girl who they got to play Susie Salmon, she is the anchor of the movie, and they cast her with good reason.
Cool.
It's a very interesting movie. It's dark. It's real dark. But if you're a fan of Peter Jackson outside of Lord of the Rings, you know that Peter Jackson does dark movies.
Yeah.
So it's nothing I didn't expect. I mean, it's good. Just didn't, blow my mind or anything.
Okay.
And then the Book of Eli.
Book of Eli.
Between the Book of Eli and Youth in Revolt, it's starting to look like January is not looking like a dumping month anymore.
Yeah.
A dumping of crap. It looks like a month where they're putting movies that they have no idea what to do with at the studios. And that was an interesting movie.
Yeah, I really dug it. Really dug it a lot.
There's so much I want to talk about that's spoiler-based, so I can't talk about it. We really shouldn't talk about it.
Yeah, it's probably too early to talk about the spoiler stuff. But we could just talk about generally the things we didn't like.
Mila Kunis, she's coming along so much as an actress.
Yeah, she held her own with Washington, which is saying quite a lot.
And Gary Oldman. Yeah. For like the whole three scenes she has with him. But yeah, she belonged in that movie, and she did so good in it.
Yeah.
And I didn't read any reviews for this movie until after I saw it.
Good, good man.
But this is a Western.
Yeah.
Really, and it's not as good as a Kurosawa adaptation Western, but it evokes the same tone and feeling behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And I really dug that. It has a nice sepia tone behind it and everything, and there's a lot of Christian allegory, oddly so.
Yeah.
I'm still not entirely certain how I feel about that, especially with some of the actions that Eli takes and the ending in specifically. I just, it kind of made it made it seem like it was going to be one kind of movie, and then it kind of ended very ambiguously at the end, I thought.
Yeah.
What did you think?
I liked it a lot. I was amazed that Denzel was so believable as a machete-toting action hero. This is the kind of role that like Clint Eastwood did, early in his career in the spaghetti westerns, and I was quite surprised to see Denzel pull it off. He's an excellent actor, but I wasn't sure if he was up for it. This is kind of like watching Liam Neeson in Taken. It's like, really? Oh yeah, he's completely capable as an action star. He was very good.
Yeah, some 19 jokes pretty funny.
Yeah, Yeah, well, you know, I really appreciated, first of all, you know, it's a post-apocalyptic movie, a post-apocalyptic Western, certainly, but it has a sense of humor, first of all. I really appreciated that. And the other thing is that the Hughes brothers, they didn't pretend like this is the only movie. Like, all these movies, they have such self-importance to them, but, like, they know this is not the first time we've seen this type of movie. I mean, we've seen this type of movie so many times last year, but, like, they have a lot of fun with the fact that they're not the first ones in the game. There's a really cool way they acknowledge that. The scene where Denzel is in the sort of hotel room that Gary Oldman provides him. There's a boy and his dog poster on the wall. You know, Boy and His Dog is one of the great post-apocalyptic Western movies. So it's like the Hughes brothers are clearly acknowledging the fact that this is not the first of its kind. And I thought, although it's not, the movie's not on the level of The Matrix, I thought the Hughes brothers are doing the same thing the Wachowski brothers did. They're having a lot of fun with this. They're having a lot of fun with making this kind of genre movie. It's a mix-up of some of their favorite types of movies. I mean, you've got, like, I mean, there are bits in this movie that are kind of like Old Boy, kind of like spaghetti westerns. You mean, like, you know, and to go on and on and on. And without spoiling anything, the ending is a little bit like El Topo. There's, like, so many different types of movies in here. And again, I think this is just them having a lot of fun with this story, but I think the story is meaningful, and I thought it was very moving. And I gotta say, without even remotely hinting at it, the surprise at the end of the movie, I gotta say, you see something is coming, but
it gets hinted at it in the first like 2 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, but I gotta say, I was,
and that's what I want to talk about so bad, so let's talk about it off the air.
I was completely floored by it. Yeah, we'll talk about it later.
But yeah, definitely check it out.
I think it's a great film.
Really good action. Yeah, it's just, it's a good story in general. I was kind of chatting a little bit with Elizabeth Rapp from Cinematical and Real Loop, and she thought the Christianity behind it was kind of a little bit oppressive. There was so much of it there. But I think that if you just like made it a Betty Crocker cookbook that he was carrying around, then it would be, you know, pretty much just like a classic, you know, samurai Western. And I just really, yeah, I liked it a lot.
Well, there's a lot of things, you know what I mean? Because I think people are going to jump on and go, oh, it's a Christian metaphor. And it's certainly, that is there. But make no mistake, this is an awesome action movie.
Yeah, it's not really, it's definitely not a Christian movie, quote unquote.
This is not Fireproof with Machete. This is a cool movie.
People, I would pay to see that, though, I'll be very honest.
Oh, me too. Kirk Cameron. With the Pack and Heat. Yeah, I'd go see that.
As long as it's not killing someone who's his wife, you know, it's okay.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Okay. Machete, the one in the preview for Death Proof.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to ask if they were actually going to.
Oh yeah,
they are. Yeah, that's apparently coming out this year, right?
Yeah,
Robert Rodriguez's Machete. Robert De Niro? Is Rourke in it?
I think so.
I think so. Danny Trejo, of course, is back as Machete. Robert Rodriguez, who directed Planet Terror
and the trailer
and Spy Kids.
So. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So okay, let's go ahead and talk about what's hitting DVDs this week. And
DVDs this week, what do we get? Let's see. Gerard Butler and Gamer, which I think Gerard Butler and his mother went and saw, but no one else. Smoking Aces 2, Assassin's Ball, one of the great movie titles of all time, with almost none of the talent from the first movie. Joe Carnahan, who was the director of the first movie, he's back as producer. Vinnie Jones, I think, is the biggest name in Smoking Aces 2, Assassin's Ball.
Nora Jones isn't back?
I know. She was one of the best things about that one, yeah, I thought, too. Ryan Reynolds was good. Yeah. There's some good things about that movie, even though I didn't... You didn't like that one, did you?
At the time, it was the best movie I'd seen that year, but that was also like 2 weeks into January.
Okay.
Like saying that, you know, some of the movies we've seen this year already have been the best of the year so far is actually means something, as opposed to, hey, it was better than One Missed Call, you know?
No kidding. Yeah, Book of Eli, man, what a step up from most of these movies. Kate Beckinsale and Whiteout, which had been delayed by 2 years, and once you see the movie, kind of know why. It's like The Thing without The Thing. It's a lot of people running around in the snow screaming at each other. Not a terrible movie, but really, no, not good. 30-something Season 2, good series. Robert Altman's Streamers, which has never been released on DVD, and I don't think it's ever been released on VHS. This is a very good film. Damages Season 2, a Glenn Close, supposed to be one of the best shows on TV with Rose Byrne. Pandorum with Dennis Quaid and Ben Foster in theaters for 5 seconds. Another one, although this one's supposed to be considerably better, The Invention of Lying with Ricky Gervais and Jennifer Garner. Steven Soderbergh's Che, available in the Criterion Special Edition. Great film. If you have 5 hours, it's a really great film, I promise.
Especially in Blu-ray.
That's right. That would be good to see in Blu-ray. Fraggle Rock, the complete animated series. As I said last episode, I didn't even know they made this.
I vaguely remember this. Vaguely. It was around the same time as Muppet Babies. So.
Okay, yeah, because I'm down with the Muppet Babies. Why don't they release that?
Okay, think about all the movie clips they put in there.
That's why. Yeah, because I remember Indiana Jones clips.
Star Wars,
and Dracula.
All over the place.
Yep, you're right. Yeah. Yep. And then Defying Gravity Season 1.
Woohoo! So you know what you want to see and what you don't want to see, I guess.
Yes. It's an interesting week.
Yeah, it is an interesting week. I'm more excited for next week because of two releases in particular.
Heck yeah.
All right. Let's move into some news. Shall we do the big news about Spider-Man 4?
Let's.
So apparently, after much talking between Sam Raimi and Sony, they just couldn't come to agreement. So Sam Raimi has agreed to walk from this project, and as a result, so has Tobey Maguire.
Good for them.
And which means that now they're rebooting the franchise a whopping 10 years after it started. Here's the frustrating thing. They were talking about how they couldn't... this whole impasse came about because Sam Raimi wasn't going to be able to make the release date that they had set for him. So that's why he walked. So what do? They reboot the franchise and set the release date a year after the date that they'd done for Sam Raimi. Couldn't you just move it back a year? Really?
This is kind of like the NBC Jay Leno debacle.
Did you watch the Jimmy Kimmel stuff?
Yeah, I did.
When Jimmy Kimmel was on Jay Leno? Mm-hmm. Oh, that was funny.
That was painful.
He took shot. He didn't hold back at all.
Yeah, I'm someone who likes Leno, but man, if nothing else, this makes very entertaining TV to see all this crazy crap that's going on.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Then you had the Chevy Chase come out dressed as O'Brien on Jimmy Kimmel's show. Yeah, it was good stuff.
Yep.
But so they're rebooting it back into high school. Taylor Lautner is playing Mary Jane Watson.
You heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen.
I don't know. between Raimi leaving and them rebooting the series, my interest in the franchise has completely bottomed out.
In all honesty, it kind of bottomed out for me after Spider-Man 3.
But
I'm kind of done.
I understand that, but at the same time, let's remember that wasn't Raimi's fault entirely by a long shot.
Oh, no. I don't blame it. No, I'm always about the screenwriters. I've told you, like the two Schumacher Batmans, I was always about, like, you know, going after Akiva Goldsman. But yeah. First and foremost, I always thought, go after him.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry. Yes, sir.
How would they do Spider-Man 3 without Spider-Man?
Well, I mean, I object to Spider-Man 3 just because I thought it was a little too crowded. I thought there were too many villains. I thought it was just a little kind of a bloated, overdone movie. But with a fourth one, I mean, can you see them keep going further with new villains? Just kind of like, I mean, wasn't the series always about how Peter Parker wanted to finally hook up with Mary Jane? And now that has finally happened. I mean, for Pete's sake, they got married at the end of Spider-Man 2.
Well, they also got married in the comics.
Yes. It's like, I don't know. It seems like unless they completely come up with something radically different, there's not a whole lot of new things to do here. So, like, of course, they're going to go back to high school and make it Twilight with Spider-Man.
But how would they go back to high school when...
They're just rebooting it. They're essentially saying those movies didn't happen. We're starting over.
It's kind of like The Incredible Hulk. Remember, there was one Hulk movie, and then they went back and, like, just kidding. This is the first Hulk movie. And there's a new one with Edward Norton.
But... never mind.
Okay. I don't know. Would you want to see that? Like, it's like they're going to start all over again. They're going to pretend like the first three movies never happened, and they're going to start with high school.
There's so many different things that they can do based off, like, the cartoon.
Because
there's so many villains in the cartoon.
Yeah.
Well, and in the comics. Those were taken from the comics. Even the MTV cartoon was pretty good.
It was.
Patrick Harris. And,
yeah. I like that.
I finally found one in my brother's room that had, like, that was the one where Spider-Man died.
Oh. It's pretty good.
I didn't read it. I was scared to.
Fair enough. Yeah, I don't know. I was hoping that I was hoping that Raimi would be able to pull off, you know, kind of pull out of the tailspin, but sounds like he just ejected instead.
You know, the thing is, though, he doesn't feel like he needs to be trapped by this.
No.
I know that's one thing Tim Burton said. He felt kind of trapped by Batman, not because he didn't want to make Batman Returns, but he didn't want to keep making these movies over and over and over again. So I'm glad that Raimi is free to...
Do World of Warcraft.
World of Warcraft.
No, that's what he's doing next.
Really?
Yeah. Although I'm hoping for Evil Dead 4 after that. We all know it's not going to happen, which is why I can say it.
He's a good dramatic actor. I mean, dramatic director. I mean, like, with The Gift and stuff. I wish he would go back to that stuff. Or even, like, another sort of pseudo Drag Me to Hell movies. He doesn't feel like he... Although I wish he would make, of course, Evil Dead 4 before World of Warcraft, obviously.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. No. What, have you got any news this week, really?
Well, Ivan Reitman is officially directing Ghostbusters 3, which is very exciting.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I'm really excited about that.
Now, did he do both of the first?
He did.
He did the first two, okay. Mm-hmm.
He hasn't done a great movie since Kindergarten Cop, in all honesty, but I really want to see him do this movie. I really do. He was the only one I wanted, and because he's a great comedy director, but he hasn't made a great comedy in a long time, and I think it's because the scripts have been so weak. I mean, Exhibit A, My Super Ex-Girlfriend, he directed that.
Oh, I liked that.
Oh, did you?
I'm sorry.
Okay, okay. The one fan, the one person who saw it is here.
Now we know who bought the ticket.
There you go. The reason made $7.95. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's been a long time because otherwise, I mean, over the years from what he's done, he did Father's Day with Billy Crystal, Robin Williams. He did 6 Days, Seven Nights with Harrison Ford. He did Evolution with David Duchovny. Which,
that's
yeah.
That's a goofy fun.
Me too. I like it too.
I love that movie.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Yeah. The farting aliens at the end. That was just... when the way they had to get into the alien. I'm just going to leave it at that.
The aliens were fun, no question. But, and all, I don't know. He's one of these guys I've always wanted to see him have a comeback. And this is such an obvious choice for him to have a comeback vehicle. I'd love to see him. I'd love to see all these guys just have a total knockout. Because Ghostbusters 2 is acceptable, but it's not a great movie.
No,
I would love for Ghostbusters 3 to be at least on the same pantheon as the first one, if that's possible.
Absolutely. And you know, getting back to the weird 80s feeling comedies, I totally forgot to say the Hot Tub Time Machine trailer showed in front of the Book of Eli.
Nice.
That went over so big in the for the audience.
Oh yeah.
I'm just like, seriously, it's my kind of stupid. That's all.
It's
I can
one of
say.
The best trailers out right now. That trailer, and I know you're not happy about this, but the Death at a Funeral trailer, that is the only ones I ever see with an audience where people are always laughing.
They laughed at that one too. I'm just like, it was so much. It was good already as it was right
now. Did you see the original? You're starting to heckle the people in the audience.
I didn't do that. I thought about it, but I didn't. I held myself in check. Let's see. We've got some photos that were taken from the Predators set. Did you see these?
I did. You know what? I've been under the misconception all this time that Robert Rodriguez is directing it. I didn't realize he was just producing it, that it's Nimrod Antal who's directing it.
Yeah. What?
They're making another one?
Yeah. And it's on the Planet of the Predators.
Yeah, so it's Planet of the Predators, essentially, with starring Topher Grace. And what? It's just called Predators with an S.
What about the girl?
Who's the girl? It's got an all-star cast. Adrian Brody's in it.
Is the girl from the second one in it?
No.
This is entirely different.
All new people.
Yeah.
Speaking of reboot.
Yeah. Yippee. Okay.
Yeah.
And have you got anything else, or should I just do this Green Lantern thing real quick?
Green Lantern.
All right. So apparently we are getting Sinestro, which I know sinister. Get it? Yeah. Okay. We're talking about the 40s when there weren't the most creative of villain names. I'm just saying.
Sinestro.
And honestly, you know, Steph loves to point out that DC does have some insanely lame villains in it. Mm. Marvel tends to have better villains overall, but some iconic ones in DC too.
I love Mr. Mixaplex, or Sixaplex, or however the heck you say his name.
Mixaplex, you had it right.
Okay, Mixaplex, love him. I don't know if he'd make a good, I don't think he'd be good in a movie, but I love the character.
He was great. Did you ever see the Superman cartoon that they did from this animated series where Gilbert Gottfried do his voice?
Yeah, that
was hilarious.
Yeah, that was a good choice.
Anyhow, Sinestro is going to be in this, and apparently the thought had always been that Jackie Earle Haley was going to play him. And
weird.
Someone talked to Martin Campbell. He's like, I have no idea where people are getting this. We're actually in the midst of let's see. No, that's completely wrong. In fact, we're in negotiations with Mark Strong to play Sinestro. So,
Mark Strong.
Lord Blackwood from Sherlock Holmes.
I always think of him. He was in Body of Lies, and he was like one of the best things about the movie. He was the kind of bad guy in the movie. He was really good. He steals the movie from DiCaprio. But yeah, he's interesting.
I think he's got the, I hate the word gravitas, but he has that Sinestro needs in order to be able to pull off that pomposity that he needs to have.
Yeah.
And apparently there's more details that we're going to be seeing Kilowog. That's all I care about. Because Kilowog is like the most badass person in the comics. He's awesome.
Who's directing this?
Martin Campbell.
Martin Campbell, okay.
From Casino Royale.
Well, speaking of which, I hope Edge of Darkness is great. I'm so rooting for that movie. I can't even tell you. I don't know because it's January, but I would love for it to be a slam dunk.
Yeah. So we will see what happens. Let's see here. Abin Sur has to be in it because he's the one who gives Hal Jordan his ring. Tomar Rey's in it, who's like his best friend. And yeah, it's shaping up to be a pretty decent amount of fun, I think.
And we have a release date, right?
I believe so. I don't have it here in front of me, but...
Is it 2011?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
That's definitely not this year.
Because didn't they just say, I mean, this is sort of a new story. I don't really want to get into it, but apparently Transformers 3 starts shooting this summer.
Okay.
Did you like the second one, Cody? Did you like Transformers 2, Revenge of the Fallen?
I like Megan Fox.
Wow. What'd you think of the movie, though? All the scenes where she's not in it, what'd you think?
I thought the new Transformers that they introduced were really, really cool.
He's like the one that was kind of like a panther that was on the beach.
No, I didn't like how it like spit down the small ones that created like the paper thin,
right,
invisible one. I just like the ice cream truck guy that split into two.
Yeah,
he was cool.
There you go. Yes, three Transformers, three dimensions of suck.
More than me is the eye.
All right. Well, I guess that's about it. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll come back and talk about John McTiernan's The Hunt for October.
This is Ray.
Sup?
Let's listen in as Ray hits on Sandra.
Excuse me, miss, but do you know karate? Because your body is kicking.
Now, let's listen to the same scene. Only this time, Ray is sporting a quality Geek Label t-shirt.
Yo, baby, I was wondering,
Damn.
Rejection.
What's up with that?
We can't really stop it.
Damn.
But we can outfit you in buttery smooth designs for geeks, gamers, and tech heads. They're custom t-shirts. They're not magic t-shirts.
Damn.
Another fine product from geeklabel.com.
Hi, this is Nichelle Nichols, and when I'm in this quadrant, I tune in to Screen Geeks Radio. You should too.
And we're back to talk about John McTiernan. We're almost done with this John McTiernan series. Today we're going to be talking about The Hunt for Red October. This is his film following Die Hard. Hunt for Red October came out March of 1990, so almost 20 years ago. Hunt for Red October was actually a very troubled film, believe it or not. It was supposed to open Christmas of 1989. They pushed it back a few months because the special effects were not ready. And if you look at the film, some of the missile effects are, you can tell they're kind of blue screen and kind of a little shaky. Otherwise, you know what? This is one of my favorite John McTiernan movies. This is the first of the Jack Ryan thrillers, the first film based on a Tom Clancy novel to actually be made into a film.
Arguably the best.
I would say so. I really would. This is the movie that put Alec Baldwin on the map. Well, I don't know if I should say that. It's what made him a big screen leading man, because otherwise you had like Beetlejuice and She's Having a Baby and Married to the Mom. Exactly. Yeah. Well, like smaller roles and smaller movies, but this was the first time he was actually called into anchor a big movie. He actually has more scenes than Sean Connery in this movie. Most people don't realize that. Connery at the time, this is the first film he did right after Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. Anybody wanted to see him do anything after that film.
Yeah.
So he was like, this is back when he was like one of our top actors. So cool that he's one of these guys who's been around since the 60s playing Bond. He kind of faded out with some bad movies, and then he kind of came back. I'm trying to think, maybe it was...
he was so popular that no one cared that he played a Russian sub-captain with a Scottish...
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Well, you know, even in The Untouchables, the movie he won an Oscar for. I mean, he's supposed to be a guy from Chicago. Yeah, right. And no, I mean, he is so, I mean, we use the word gravitas. I mean, he's so charismatic. He is such a 100% proof movie star. It's like nobody, like, who cares? We don't care if he's Irish, Scottish, whatever. He is Sean Connery. He can play whatever the heck he wants. And even though he'll never pass as a Russian, he's terrific in this movie.
He had the look of it. Absolutely. You know, with the big full beard and everything. And it's such a good movie. This is probably my favorite use of a camera to transfer from using subtitled Russian to English.
It's brilliant the way they do that.
That's like, if for no other reason, it's worth watching the entire movie just for that opening scene.
It's a great scene. One of the best ensemble casts. I mean, you've got Tim Curry,
yes,
Jeffrey Jones, James Earl Jones, Richard Jordan, Joss Ackland from the bad guy from Lethal Weapon 2 and from Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. who else? Just amazing, amazing, huge
Gates
cast.
Gates McFadden. For the whole like 30 seconds.
That's
season
right.
Movie,
that's but... right. Cause, yeah, sorry, she played Mrs. Jack Ryan. What's his name? Stellan Sarsgaard is in it.
Really?
He's one of the evil submarine captains.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like just astonishing cast. I love the music to it.
This was the first like score I ever bought on tape.
Yeah, Basil Poledouris is the guy who did the music to RoboCop, and really exciting score. And I always say, like, I can't say it's happened to me a lot since, but this is the first time I ever saw a movie that literally was on the edge of my seat. The climax of this movie, where it is they go back and forth between a submarine missile battle and an underwater gunfight chase scene. So freaking exciting. I love it's such a thrilling climax of this movie.
Yeah, although I'm kicking myself for not grabbing the bite where Alec Baldwin is impersonating Sean Connery, because that was pretty funny.
You know, it's a nice nod to Die Hard, too. He's like crawling through the tight space and he's making one line. I mean, it's totally John McClane.
Yeah, but it's such a thrilling movie. It's so good. I love this movie.
I do too. And although I got to say, honestly, the plot is so complex that there are things I caught, I think like maybe the 15th, 20th time watching it. There's things I'm still kind of learning. It's so complex. Like the whole thing about like the crazy Ivans and all the details and the sub details. Yeah, there's a lot to this movie that like it requires a few screens, I think, to fully get everything.
Hey, when I watched the Firefly pilot and they're like, let's pull a Crazy Ivan, I go to Hunt for October. That's just where it is. And it has such, it's just such a solid movie all the way around. I mean, I think you can make an argument for this being his best film.
Yeah, I really do. Because
and it's PG.
It's PG, amazingly PG. Even though I think Die Hard is ultimately the best, one of the best action movies, this film has such a great ensemble cast. It is such a polished, classy film. And it's such a terrific submarine thriller. I mean, there are so many ways to get that wrong or like make it too claustrophobic or whatever, but it's just, they make each sub have its own visual style. The editing in this movie is so crisp. I mean, this is just, I think, yeah, I would say arguably his best film. Really would, even though I love Die Hard just a little bit more, but I think this is just the better film.
It's not only a good action film, it's just got great intrigue. It's suspenseful as all get out. And, you know, to show how good it is, you know, what was it? Crimson Tide came out, what was it, like 5-7 years later, something like that. And I remember going, this is a Hunt for October ripoff. This is... Rah!
Well, that's how I felt about U-571, too.
Oh, absolutely.
The only film that I think trumps Hunt for October, arguably, is Das Boot, the Wolfgang Peterson movie. But, I mean, as far as American sub-movies go, yeah, I don't think this has ever been topped.
No, it's just... Oh.
Yeah, it's absolutely top notch. It is exciting. It's well done. It's incredibly complex, but it's edgier seat excitement. Nah, blah blah blah.
And I need to get the new version of this because I've got the original DVD release. That's like kind of crappy. Mm-hmm. And I know Melissa borrowed your copy. I was looking at it. It's got DTS 5.1 on it. And I'm like, I need to buy this version.
Oh heck yeah! The sound effects are terrific in this movie.
Yeah, at bare minimum, rent the movie. But I mean, you can pick it up for like less than $10 now pretty easily. And yeah. It's worth every penny.
Absolutely. I got the special edition, which has the John McTiernan commentary, and there's a really good behind-the-scenes featurette where they interview Alec Baldwin. Like, it's current.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Didn't get Connery?
They did, but the interview is from 1989. Okay, so it's a little old, but yeah. No, I love this film. I really do. This is my favorite Jack Ryan movie. I mean, after this, they went and did, let's see, it was Patriot Games.
Patriot Games got me so mad.
Oh, because all the changes?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because I read the book first, and I'm like,
ooh, yeah.
What?
Yeah, the movie and the book couldn't be more different.
You know, Clear and Present Danger is good.
It is. I think it has...
It has problems.
I think it has a thing that this movie avoids. It's so complex, and it's so talky that I think it kind of bogs the film down a little bit, whereas with Red October, I never had that problem. But Clear and Present Danger, at times, I feel like I was watching like a CNN or like a West Wing kind of a movie. But it does, like, it finally just pick up like an hour in.
Yeah, then the Sum of All Fears, a lot of people just don't like because it's Ben Affleck.
I like it.
I do, too.
I thought he was a good Jack Ryan. I thought it was a really solid movie. In fact, I think Sum of All Fears and Red October, I would say the best.
Yeah, although, I think so too.
Yeah, I did like Patriot Games, but no, you're right. I mean, if you read the book, where it's an assassination attempt on the royal family in the movie,
and they keep walking in on his hotel into his hospital room. Hey, how's it going? You know, you're like, whoa, that's cool.
They completely do away with all that in the movie.
Indeed.
Yeah.
So wow, this is like really brief because we have everything we have to say and we're done and all right.
Yeah.
It's so good. There's really not, you don't want to spoil anything either.
I would be very curious to hear what Melissa thinks because I know she had never seen it before. So I wonder if, you know, looking at it from a fresh perspective, if the flaws of the movie, namely maybe
it's turned into like a War Games type thing where it may not age so well.
Maybe not, but I still think it's a thrilling movie. But then again, I mean, it's nostalgic for me. I remember seeing this in the theater. I remember how it just thrilled me to no end.
Yes.
So
that takes care of Hunt for October. Next week we will be ending our John McTiernan series with Die Hard with a Vengeance. And then after that, it's our top 10 of 2009.
Oh boy.
Which your list is already up on Maui time, isn't it?
It is.
So if you want the preview, you're all good.
There you go.
Dun, dun, dun. Mm-hmm. You want to see where New Moon lands on his list? Check it out.
That's right. Number two, baby.
I'm just going to leave it alone. Yeah, okay, because it is number two. All right.
Are you serious?
No, it's not.
No. It's number two.
Okay.
Yes. Before we move on to this week's releases, I feel awful for doing this, but I want to go back to the Book of Eli real quick.
Okay.
Ray Stevenson didn't suck.
Yeah.
He was really good.
Yeah, I gotta say, I was kind of repressed. I didn't even recognize him until the end credits. I'm like, oh, there's Ray Stevenson, the Punisher. Holy crap.
But good.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't recognize him with his shaved head. But yeah, I gotta say, he was very good. Whatever that role required, he brought it. And he didn't do that for Punisher, so.
No. Good well, for you. Good I don't for know you. That there was much required.
Well, just to look angry and like he had to really go to the bathroom and shoot people.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Absolutely. Yeah. All right, well, let's go ahead and talk about what is hitting theaters this weekend.
This weekend in theaters, you've got Harrison Ford and Brendan Fraser, based on a true story, a film produced by Harrison Ford, Extraordinary Measures. Paul Bettany is Legion, co-starring Doug Jones and Dennis Quaid. This is the supernatural.
This movie makes no sense.
It looks good.
Cody wants to see it.
Yeah.
He's protecting the Antichrist. Come on.
Right. But wasn't it like God is the bad guy here?
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And so Legion's the hero. Yeah. So it's like if Marilyn Manson can make a movie, this would be it.
Yeah, there you go.
This is like, so cool. With the whole scene where like the guy grows his arms longer and then like turns around.
Didn't you see that? Remember X-Men did that? X-Men The Last Stand. Remember the guy with the wings?
Yeah, Angel,
you've already had that. They've done this. Well, you know, I don't know what I'd rather see. English doesn't work today. Legion or the Tooth Fairy. This is Dwayne Johnson bringing Ashley Judd, Julie Andrews, and Billy Crystal down to terrible, terrible levels. This is like one of the worst films of the year.
It's very easy to say that. There are three major releases. We can wholeheartedly recommend one of them, and since you just knock two of them out, we won't get in trouble for saying which one we would recommend.
Yes. We'll talk about that. opening in far less theaters, another Paul Bettany movie, A Creation. This is the Darwin pick, starring him as Charles Darwin, and his wife, Jennifer Connelly, plays Charles Darwin's wife. I heard this wasn't a very good movie. It played at some film festivals. I heard it's kind of a snoozer. In limited release, a film I really like a lot. This showed at this year's Denver Film Fest, The Girl on the Train with Catherine Deneuve. It is a pseudo French political thriller. Really, really good. Very unpredictable. Really, really great film. I hope it catches on. But can we talk about Extraordinary Measures or not?
We're not supposed to.
Not supposed to? Okay, forget it.
We might have an interview if I can save the audio enough posting on by Friday.
Okay.
And then we'll talk about it this week. And I know my review's going to post on Screen Geeks and yours is probably going to post over at Maui Time. So, yeah. Come Friday, you'll be able to see what we think about it and we'll talk about it on the next show too.
Yep. Extraordinary Measures. Stay tuned. And then DVD. We'll just jump into DVD releases.
Yes.
Michael Jackson's This Is It. I don't know if anybody knew how this film was going to do in theaters, but it did quite well. And I got to say, it's a very good film. Very good. Very good documentary, especially if you're down with Jacko. Jane Campion's Bright Star, starring Abbie Cornish. Good film. Good film. Not one of Jane Campion's best, but, you know, it's a step up from In the Cut, so there you go. a movie I liked a whole lot, and it didn't do very well. Bruce Willis's thriller, Surrogates. Really great. Really great film.
Even at the cheap theater, I feel kind of bad about that, but I'll be able to rent it.
Yeah, check it out. I bet it looks really good on Blu-ray.
I wouldn't know.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Oh, I need to have you over.
Yeah.
Drew Barrymore's directorial debut, Whippet, with Ellen Page, Kristen Wiig, Julia Lewis. This is a really good movie. Did you see this, Cody?
No, I don't want to.
No, it's good. You'll see Legion, but you won't see Whippet. See Whippet. It's good. It's good. I promise.
Is it about roller skating?
Roller derby. Girls beating the crap out of each other.
Yeah, girls on roller skates beating the snot out of each other. It's really good. It's not a roller. They don't like just skate in circles and just hold hands.
Yeah, it's not figure skating with roller blades. No. It's kind of rougher than that.
Yeah. It's a dude's movie, I promise. It's really good. It's really good.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, see it. Saw 6. Saw 6, which Dave and I saw, and it's on my...
I'm done. I will never... Oh, you know, that can't... I do have another movie. I can put that on my worst of the year list. I don't know.
Yeah, well, it's definitely on my worst of the year list.
What?
Did you see it?
No, but...
It's bad.
It's really bad, man. Yeah, Saw 6.
But all the traps look so cool.
Well,
But the story sucks.
You can look at the poster. The poster's cool. You don't have to watch the movie. Just buy the poster. Skip the movie. To instant review. Robert Pattinson showing that he doesn't have range outside of Twilight or at all. Playing Salvador Dali in Little Ashes. It's like Sean Connery saying a porn title.
Exactly.
Little Ashes. All right. Sorry, that was cheap and easy. But you know, that's my shtick here on Screen Geeks.
Wow, that was good. Okay.
But just to get you to laugh, that was worth it. The Boys Are Back. That also sounds like a suspicious film.
Let's leave it alone.
The Boys Are Back. That stars Clive Owen. This is one of those father bonding with his son dramas. Looks totally cheese. Have you seen the trailer?
No.
Total cheese. Like Clive Owen, I guess, trying to make us forget Children of God. Like, what are you doing? Children of Men. Excuse me, Children of Men. Clive Owen,
yeah.
Cheesy cheese. Fantastic movie from 1984 called Paris, Texas. This is the Wim Wenders movie.
Criterion, yeah.
Criterion's right. Carrying. Yeah, I love this movie.
There's already a review of the Blu-ray up at DVD Talk, and they were saying it's a really good transfer.
Great, great. The film stars Harry Dean Stanton, Nastassja Kinski, and Dean Stockwell. I love this film. This is probably my favorite Wim Wenders movie. It's awesome. Please see it. Real Ghostbusters, Volume 2.
This will be another steelbook.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I got the first season. I watched a few episodes. Doesn't hold up so well.
Really?
No.
Hmm. That's too bad.
Yeah, I'm probably going to be getting rid of it here pretty soon.
Ah, did you ever watch the real Ghostbusters? The cartoon show Ghostbusters?
No, was it good?
Yeah, I liked it, but it's been a while.
Yeah.
It's been a while, honestly. All right, Riff Tracks. Riff Tracks is releasing, let's see, Plan 9 from Outer Space Live.
Which this is the Riff Tracks Live thing that we went to, yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think it's the complete thing with the Jonathan Coulton performance and the stewardesses, flying stewardesses beforehand. And
great.
The flying stewardess is worth it by itself.
Oh, heck yeah.
But Plan 9, that was the first time I've seen Plan 9, and I can't see watching it any other way.
No. Otherwise, it's torture. Torture to sit through that. It's torture to sit through any Ed Wood movie. I don't care how good the Tim Burton movie is. His movies are terrible.
You're not a Glenn or Glendum fan?
No, I can't stand Glenn or Glendum. I've seen that one I've only seen once in my life. I'll never see. Plan 9 I've seen a bunch of times, but yeah, Glenn or Glendum, I will never go back. Never going back.
But this is a lot of fun.
Absolutely. And then last but in no way least, Parker Lewis Can't Lose, season 2. Oh, how many seasons was that?
Three. There was only three. So we have this habit of collecting series that either last three seasons or less, or like 10 or more.
Yeah.
Because we've got the entire series of MASH, which is, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, that was kind of stupid.
That's to get long. In on. That's a lot of TV right
yes,
there.
Yes. And then we got like all seven seasons of Star Trek The Next Gen and yeah. And then I get stuff, you know, like the Dresden Files or, you know, I had Sledgehammer at one point.
Oh, I love Sledgehammer. Yeah. Love Sledgehammer. Yeah.
But Parker Lewis holds up still to this day.
Sweet.
Fashion's a little out of date, but it's so good.
Yeah.
Such a good high school show.
Oh, heck yeah. I just remember it coming out the same time as the Ferris Bueller TV show, and that was expected to like wipe the floor with it. And then Ferris Bueller was gone, but Parker Lewis kept going and going.
At the end of the second or third season, there's like they finished doing their thing, and there's this guy, there's two guys watching, you know, the best buds do their thing. It's like, man, they know how to do this. Come on, Ferris, let's go home.
They just
took a shot at it.
What a slam, man.
They make some Ferris Bueller jokes in the Parker Lewis show. He's like, man, that Ferris Bueller guy sure knew what he was talking about when he pulled off some gag from the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Very cool.
Shall we do our voicemails first?
Let's do voicemails. Let's save the best for last.
Okay, let me pull them up. We have three of them this week.
All right.
If I can just get to them, we'll be in great shape. Details. Let's see here now. We got two from the same person. You know what? Let's just go ahead and roll it now.
Hey, Screen Geeks. This is Jalen. This is going to be a fairly long voicemail, but whatever. I just wanted to thank you guys for talking about Die Hard. That's one of my favorite, all-time favorite movies. I saw it 3 years ago for the first time and was blown away. I love it. Actually, the fourth one that came out the exact same year that I saw the first one actually was one of my favorite movies of 2007. And I wanted to talk about the Golden Globes and actually the Academy Awards too, real quick. I know you guys probably haven't seen Quite with a Chance of Meatballs, and if you guys haven't, you guys need to. It's hilarious. One of the best animated films I would say of last year. And I think Avatar is a really fun and good movie. Honestly, one of the best film experiences I had last year. But why is it up for best drama? Honestly, I don't get that. And why is it also up for talk for best picture? I don't get that either. I'm gonna go here, but why is that? Like last year, you have something like that. At least try something new. Like, okay, I know you guys are big fan of this movie, but like The Dark Knight, why is it that people have trouble trying to get that nominated, but yet everyone's willing to bow down 100% to something that's recycled like Avatar? I don't know. I just don't get it. To me, the special effects are amazing, and I think James Cameron did a great job, but I don't know if I would say it's best picture, but you know, this is my two cents. So, but you guys are doing a great job, and can't wait to hear more. Thanks.
Thanks, Jalen, very much. You know, and not only that, Avatar has been nominated for WGA Best Screenplay.
Best screenplay. Wow.
I just don't get that.
Yeah, that dialogue was amazing. You know what? I will say this. Thank you for bringing that up, and thank you so much for the voicemail in general. That was great. I agree with you. Not only does it not deserve to be for Best Picture, but I totally agree. I love the thing you'd saying that this was like one of the best experiences you had at the movies last year. Because you know what? I had a fantastic experience seeing Beowulf on IMAX 3D. Beowulf will never be on my top 10 list, but I loved it. It was great fun, but I didn't think it was a great movie, but it was a great experience. You know, and I totally agree with you, Jalen. I don't think that Avatar deserves Best Picture because it's a really fun movie.
The problem is it's breaking records left and right, so it's going to get nominated. Well, there's 10 yeah. Best Picture nominees.
Exactly. There's so many movies that could squeak in. Thank you for mentioning Claudia with the Chance of Meatballs. I enjoy that. You haven't seen it yet?
I haven't. It's I keep fun. Hearing it's good. So
you know, you're considering what a fan you are. Not like a diehard. I know you're not a diehard fan, but like if you're a diehard fan of Mr. T, I think you'll enjoy Claudia with the Chance of Meatballs. And speaking of diehard, thank you for mentioning. Live Free or Die Hard. I enjoyed Live Free or Die Hard.
Absolutely.
But you know what? I know Dave and I completely disagree about this. I love all the Die Hard movies, including the second one. I freaking love the second one. I think the fourth one may be my least favorite just because it is so different from the others. But you know, I love the Die Hard movies. So thank you. Yeah. How would you – I know that Die Hard 2 is probably your least favorite, but like what would you say? Was your next favorite after the first one?
No. Probably goes – 3 is my favorite.
It, really?
Absolutely. The third one. Okay. Absolutely. I love Samuel L. Jackson. He and McClane.
He's good in that.
Zeus and McClane play off each other so well. Mm-hmm. After that, I have to say I'd probably go Live Free or Die Hard, then Die Hard 1. Okay. Oh, that's where I'm kind of having an issue flip-flopping between the two because they're such different films, like you said.
Yeah.
And Die Hard 2 is definitely at the bottom.
Okay. Because for me, it's the order that they came out. That's my top
really?
Four
okay.
Die Hard list. Yeah, 1, 2, 3, and 4, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, thank you. Thank you for that.
Yes.
Great.
Let's go into voicemail number 2. Could I sound more like a radio guy?
Hey, guys. This is Jared again. Sorry, I just had to add something about the whole Avatar thing. I honestly believe that if Avatar deserves a nomination, then Star Trek deserves a nomination, honestly, because that was, I think, a superior movie. Even though they were both fun and I just think Star Trek deserves to be nominated more than Avatar, but that's just my 2 cents again. So thanks and sorry for calling again, but thanks.
If that's your 2 cents, sir, your money is always good here.
Yes.
I'm just saying.
Thank you, man. You're like totally preaching to the choir because, yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I thought Star Trek was everything Avatar wasn't. Avatar is spectacular, but Trek had the heart. It had the story. It had the characters. It's a superior
I would
movie.
Argue that Trek, Moon, and District 9 were all better sci-fi films.
I couldn't agree more.
So,
Cody, what do you think? Star Trek or Avatar? What do you think was a better movie?
Star Trek,
good man, good man. Woo-hoo. We're all in agreement here. It's a good show. It's a happy show today.
It is.
Oh. We need Ethan to shake things up.
I know. See, if he wouldn't have just tried to hold his breath for so long, he'd be here right now. Let's hope he's back next week.
Oh, yeah.
All right. We got one more voicemail, so let's go ahead and roll that now.
Okay. Hi, this is Valencia. I'm just going to make a quick comment, and this is about Ink. I watched it last night with my friend because I asked him last week if he wanted to see it. And plus, he's the only person I know that would probably be willing to watch it with me. After watching it, he thought it was kind of weird, but I mean, I didn't get no other, like, you know, comment about it. But he did. I did like it, and I will give it a second watch. I wanted more fighting for some reason. I just felt like it was slow in some parts. I wasn't bored with it, but I was looking for a little bit more than what it was giving me, but I did like it. I do appreciate the backstory on the father. My friend said it reminded him of Constantine. I said it reminded me of Nightmare on Elm Street / Poltergeist. The beginning kind of had me like, what? Huh? And I realized most of the time I had my mouth wide open like, huh? What? Like, not in a confusing way, but, you know, kind of like, I wonder what's coming next. One of my podcast friends said he found it through Netflix. View. He said it didn't have a real description, and he thought it was a kid's movie, but then when the father started cursing, he had to choose another movie. He does a family movie podcast with one of his daughters, and he hadn't watched it before they sat down to watch it, so kind of, because I'm not surprised. But other than that, I just wanted to get my thoughts and comments in. I do appreciate I did get the autograph copy, so it was well worth my money, I still believe. So that's it. Bye.
I'm glad you liked it, Valencia. And, you know, yeah. I can agree. I can understand the fight scene thing because the fight choreography is so good in it. It's kind of like when you get that really insanely good chocolate chip cookie and you want another one. You just kind of want some more.
That opening scene is so extraordinary. The abduction sequence is incredible. Like I told Dave after I saw it, I said, I just want to watch Ink break stuff that goes back together over and over again. So, yeah, it's a sweet, sweet film. And Valencia, you got to tell us what you thought of Precious. We are waiting to hear what you thought of Precious.
Yes, we still seriously,
I really want to know what you think of that.
I'm very curious. Yes, yeah. And I know Chris over at the Jesus Geek saw Ink this weekend too, and he loved it. So I think they were talking about it in this week's show, which I happen to be a guest. And we're talking about Pat Robertson, so that should make for some interesting times. I hope I didn't make too big of an idiot of myself. That's all I can say about that.
Oh, sure, you're fine. I want to hear that.
But now we move on to our important portion of the show.
That's right.
I'm going to duck out because I haven't seen this movie.
Okay. Well, in Cody's class, our guest today on the show is Cody Green.
This is history class, right?
Yes. Yeah, this is Brian's history class. You had one of the assignments, and the assignment that you certainly decided to partake in, was you decided to pick a Civil War movie to watch and discuss on our show. And of all the choices that I went over with you, the one that you picked, and I got to say I was quite surprised, was The Birth of a Nation. This is the controversial 1915 film. D.W. Griffith made this film. It is a film essentially that kind of gave birth to cinema, but it's also known as one of the most hatefully racist films ever made.
Known as a KKK recruitment film.
Yes, indeed. In some places, that's still the case, reportedly. And, yeah, what did you think of this movie?
I thought it was good, other than the fact it was so old.
Was it kind of weird, like, every time you're looking at people, like, man, all these people are dead now?
Yeah, and the fact that I can't read lips, so I'll be sitting there trying to go, what are they saying? What, huh? And then that it'll pop up on the screen in a completely different way than what I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be, like, subtitled at the bottom, and instead they would cut it to a completely different...
Yeah.
Like a black card with the...
Yeah, except with white little lines on it.
Yep.
Yeah, I liked it, though. I liked the battle scenes.
What did you like about it? I liked the battle scenes. Okay.
I liked how real to this actual Civil War it was, like explaining Antietam and Bull Run and all the actual generals and Lee's surrender at the end. And then not only did it discuss the Civil War, it discussed... like, even after the Civil War, what happened with Abe, and then for those that actually sat through the second part, it discussed KKK and stuff like that. So I thought it was really good.
Did you like the Lincoln assassination scene?
Yeah, I did. I liked how I never knew that he just, like, sneaked up behind him and killed him. I thought it was, like, some whole... I actually, me and my dad were going, how did he kill him? And my dad was going, oh, I think he's one of the actors.
Yep.
And I was like, I don't think so. But whatever. And I liked it.
Wasn't it kind of creepy and weird to see? I mean, you know, it's something that unfortunately does kind of pop up sometimes in movies. Sometimes it's a joke, sometimes not. But the whole notion of blackface with white actors putting on shoe polish to pretend to be African Americans in a really awful, offensive way.
Oh, I can't.
No comment.
It was awful, but like, I actually like at the beginning of the movie with all the slaves picking cotton, and I was like, those are real African Americans. And then like, I paused it, and I was like, Barry told me that they're painting their faces black. And I paused it and I looked closer, and I saw the white lips and.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. It's interesting because there are some there's like one or two shots in the movie where there actually do have black actors in the background of some scenes. But, you know, this being Hollywood at its most racist, this being America at one of its most racist periods, there are all, like, it was like such a thing, like, oh, we're going to have black people on the set? Oh, you know, so it was like, it was a big deal to have real African-Americans on the set of the movie. So that's why there's so many scenes in the movie where it's all these ridiculous white actors with this shoe polish flesh on, and you know, acting like zombies or like lechers, and
it, yeah. And I mean, it made it seem like they were not on this planet.
Yeah, yeah.
Like they came down, like, and it. I'm gonna refer to District 9 here. It put them off like District 9 did with prawns.
There
it,
you
like,
go.
Yeah. Put them in a completely separate way, and then like it. And just the whole deal with not only did it discuss like all that, it also had a love story.
It did,
which I liked. I don't know. I mean, my dad goes to chick flicks all the time. As we enjoy this stuff, and I sat down, and my dad came in at the part where General Stoneman was pulling out of his pocket the picture of that girl, and she's standing there. I didn't know he was married when, like, he has a wife, but he's hitting on this girl, and it's for an old movie. It was really good. I liked it a lot.
This is so fascinating because, as Dave and I said, like, what? Because you're 14, right? You're 14 years old. Like, what would a 14-year-old think of a movie that came out in 1915? 15, I mean, it's ridiculous how old this movie is. And I mean, you know, because I'm showing this, as you know, to my film class in a couple weeks, and this is one of the ones they usually hate the most. So I was just so interested to see what you thought of this movie.
I wonder when the person found this movie, did they found it like on the street fossilized, or did they have to go to like,
well, this was a huge hit. This movie was, it's
really,
yeah, I'll explain really briefly the why this movie is important. Well, as we made it very clear, Birth of a Nation is a, first of all, one of the reasons why it's so controversial, it's a hatefully racist movie. The guy who made it, D.W. Griffith, his uncle was a Civil War colonel, and this movie was very much against black men and women being free after the Civil War. So this movie is essentially saying that we needed the KKK to keep black men and women in their place. So this movie came out, and at the premiere of the movie, there were Klansmen. You know, like, you know how, like, X-Men, the premiere, they had, like, you know, celebrities or, like, people dressed as mutants. In this movie, they had Klansmen.
Was John Goodman there? Sorry. Sorry.
Anyway, so...
That was a little, oh, brother, we're out there, joke. Saying that he's part of the Klan.
I got it. No, that was good. That was good. So anyway, Birth of a Nation, because it was so popular, as Dave indicated earlier, I mean, this movie really helped the KKK. It made it from being, like, this small... little groups from in little towns and stuff to being like there were marches, like hundreds of thousands of Klansmen marching up and down Washington. I mean, this movie really helped the KKK and really helped America in a really awful, disgusting, dubious way. Really installed a lot of racist feelings that were lingering after the Civil War. That's why this movie is not good, because it is truly a hateful movie. Yeah.
But when you're watching it, you get that like deep feeling way down, like you're watching something you shouldn't be watching.
Because absolutely. It is so racist. Yeah, it's like watching a Nazi recruitment movie. You're absolutely right. On the other hand, why this movie is important, or why it has importance to it, D.W. Griffith essentially gave birth to American cinema. What do I mean by that? Prior to Birth of a Nation, whenever there would be a movie, the camera would just stay still. They would place the camera in one place, like in a room, and you would just watch people walk in and out of the frame. It would be like sitting there watching a play. There wouldn't be any close-ups. There's no cuts. I mean, you know, it just cuts from scene to scene, but not in a way that was interesting. Birth of a Nation has close-ups, dramatic close-ups. It was the first movie to ever do that. Birth of a Nation gave basically birth to the action movie. There are, you know, scenes of people on horseback and cutting to a woman, like I told you, like the scene,
rape scene.
Yeah, the rape scene where there were all these you know, I hate
the black military.
Right, the black military, right. They're trying to get into this house and rape this woman. And you see like people on horseback coming to save her, and cut to her screaming, cut to the people outside trying to break into the house, cut to the guys on horseback. And people were thrilled out of their minds. This is the first time this had ever been done. It really gave birth.
The Confederates.
Right, give birth to like the first, like the whole rhythm of this movie in terms of being an action movie. This is the first movie to ever cost $1 million. It is a hugely epic movie. It was the first big epic film, because even with Chaplin films and Keaton movies, early movies were so small. I mean, this is a huge movie in scope. I mean, the scene where like the assassination of Lincoln, I mean, they rebuilt the theater.
It was really good.
You know, it's a big epic scene. So if nothing else, I mean, it is kind of like a Gone with the Wind of its time. But the problem is that it has an agenda, and it's a really, really awful agenda, which is to convert people to saying, yes, the KKK really did make America a much better place. So like so many historical movies, you obviously can't take this as gospel.
So can I bring up a random thing? The whole like saving the white woman from the black men? Is that where the scene in Blazing Saddles came in where they de-hooded him? He's like, where are the white women at? Oh, no, when they were holding them, when they were trying to draw in the Klansmen. I'm just... you know, that just clicked with me out of nowhere.
Oh, sure. Well, you know, Blazing Saddles really addresses a lot of that in such a brilliant way. You know, just the whole notion of like, you know, when America, I mean, we were so trigger happy against, you know, this awful period where we were trigger happy against anybody who was not, you know, white and speaking with a Southern accent, you know.
When he held himself at gunpoint.
My favorite part in that movie is when Cleavon Little gets the mic and says, excuse me while I whip this out. Everyone goes, ah! Yeah.
Such a class. Have you seen that?
No.
We need to talk to the parents first.
Yeah, I'll talk to Roxy. I don't know.
I'm sure they'll probably be cool with it, but.
Yeah. Is there nudity in that?
No.
I don't think so.
No.
Oh, then I can watch
it. It's just language. Yeah.
Copious amounts of copious N-bombs.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Although, like, you know, I this doesn't make it better, but the fact that Richard Pryor was one of the guys who wrote it.
But he wrote all of Mongo's lines. That's what makes that brilliant.
I know. I mean, the movie is such a great commentary on how pointless and stupid and ridiculous racism is. You know, that movie it really is an antidote to something like Birth of a Nation.
When you say it's language, do you mean like Pulp Fiction language? Like
yes.
That kind of?
Yes.
Oh, then I don't.
Except dropping the N-bomb like mad.
Yeah, yeah, lots of F-words and stuffs. But anyway.
There weren't even that many F-words. It's just saying the derogatory term for African-Americans. Although the campfire scene is worth the price of admission.
Well, it's
the first on-screen fart ever.
It's probably arguably the most famous scene in the movie, but it's not even the funniest part of the movie. That's what I love. It's famous, but it's not the funniest part of the movie.
This is the first time when somebody farts on screen?
Yeah.
Yeah, Blazing Saddles.
Yeah, it's a bunch of cowboys sitting around a campfire eating baked beans and drinking coffee, and yeah, it's pretty impressive.
Somebody just rips one.
No, pretty much everybody does.
Yeah, it's like a symphony of farts.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's amazing.
Anyway, we were talking about the Birth of a Nation.
Sorry, I just derailed that completely.
Jeez,
wow.
Dave.
Whatchamacallit, this is because you're learning about the Civil War right now. Like,
yeah.
Did it help illuminate, like by illuminate, did it help you like understand the Civil War more?
Yeah. Well, if I say that, Mrs. Brandt might get mad at me.
Uh-oh.
Mrs. Well, Brandt, you did a good job explaining it, but.
Sure, you're an amazing teacher, Mrs. Brandt.
Phenomenal.
Amazing.
But the best I've ever had. Please keep going because I might get extra credit.
There it is.
But this, like. A majority like what my questions were like, how would they line up and then have somebody being have the rebels screaming and charging at them while they're just in lines like that? Completely, the movie was totally awesome with the action sequences by having like the South like under these or behind these bunkers, like only showing the top of their head, but like the North is here just like in lines.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's kind of a holdover from the Revolutionary War battle tactics, right? From it's kind of your European strategy.
And it also gave a good, like, I don't know, it helped with the idea that like brothers were fighting brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Like one would go off to the North and one would go off to the South.
Yeah.
And then like, remember the part in the movie where the Chums. It's the Chums. I remember now. Or one of the Chums brothers is down and he's shot and he's wounded, and then the other one comes up and he's about to stab him with his bayonet, but like stops and realizes it's him, and then gets shot.
Mm-hmm.
Awful. But it was good with explaining like all the things that happened with war and how sad it was.
Yeah.
And, like, it showed the dog tents, as they would call them, like the two-person tents. It showed one of the Stone brothers when he pulled out the thing and looked at it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a girl. It showed him in one of those and, like, on the ground with the rubber blanket next to him. And we learned about that, too. And it was good. I liked the movie.
Well, I'm very surprised you like the movie because, as you've said repeatedly, it's so freaking old.
It's so old. God, so old.
I know. I mean, it really is like looking at a moving fossil, but yeah.
Think of your great-grandpa and then think of like his great-great-great-great-great-great-grandpa. He might have starred in this movie.
Fair enough.
Well, you said, like, it might have been better if Megan Fox was in it. And I said, you know, I'll bet Megan Fox's great-great-great-grandma is in that movie somewhere. So,
wow, that's an interesting place to go with that.
Yeah, right, yeah. Anyway, anything else you wanted to talk about?
We've talked a bit about it, so if you're done, you're done. It's all good.
Well, is there anything you need to... I'm prodding you for an answer. Anything you need to say for Mrs. Bryant? Or
yeah, just discuss, like, how the wars were, like, true to themselves. It actually... It showed, this is for you, Mrs. Bryant. It showed Lee's surrender, and it showed him signing the piece of paper, and it showed the Union there, and it showed the Confederacy, and like Lee signing that paper, and everybody was like happy and cheerful, and it stopped that whole plan of Lee taking over Washington, and it was, yeah. So all the wars were there. They were in perfect order too. It went Bull Run and then all the rest of them.
It's very accurate. Well, you know the guy who made it. I mean, a total Civil War enthusiast. So obviously, you know, with his uncle being a colonel.
And it said in the beginning of the movie, it not only did it show the credits at the beginning of the movie, which is strangely odd.
Yeah,
I'm not used to saying that.
So they did that through like the 40s and 50s, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. And it's not the scroll down thing. It's either it's screen by screen.
Yeah,
screen. Oh, so old. And it showed, and it was like Griffith Masterworks, and it showed like all these people, and then it said like Griffith Civil War movies, and I was like, oh, he only does Civil War movies. I was like, okay.
Yeah, he did one more film after this that's as famous. It's called Intolerance. That's another show altogether, and it was yeah.
Don't even ask.
Not interested. I'm done.
But. All right, well, Mrs. Bryant, please give Cody an A. He fully deserves it. He did the homework. This movie is, the running time is 187 minutes.
It's over 3 hours.
It was awful.
It is 187 minutes long. It is a long, long film. So please, give this young man an A, if not an A+.
Indeed.
If not, if those of you, we'll check in with you, Cody, and if she doesn't give you an A, Mrs. Bryant's number is 572. No, I'm kidding.
Wow. Dang, you're going there.
I was going to blackmail your teacher. No. Mrs. Bryant, please give him a good grade because he did a lot of work for this. So thank you so much, Cody, for that. And yeah, if any of you listeners would like to weigh in on the birth of a nation, if you'd be so inclined to, we'd like to hear what you think.
Because, you know, that's wow.
Because that's the kind of up-to-date films we talk about on our show.
Absolutely. Well, you know, we got to be top of the line. You know, that's it can't always be about, okay, never mind. I don't know.
But if you're so old.
If you'd like to shoot us an email, by all means do. You can give us an email at podcast, Ethan, Melissa, Barry, or Dave all at screengeeks.com. You can also call our voicemail line, which is 719-553-5664. And I think, let me check our contact us page. I had a question from one of our UK listeners. How do I leave a voicemail without calling the US? Because that's not exactly cheap. Let me see here under contact us. I do have, if you hit the contact us button on screengeeks.com, we have our Skype voicemail username. So if you just add me as a friend, then just call, it'll dump you straight into voicemail. So you're good there internationally.
Awesome.
Free calls are beautiful.
Yes.
But until next week, when we get back to the Die Hard goodness, this is Dave.
This is Barry. And Cody.
This has been Cody.
Yay, Cody's here.
Dig here.